The opinions expressed here today are strictly those of the individual OA member and do not represent OA as a whole.
Hi, my name is Michael B. I am a compulsive and emotional overeater. The virtual region warmly welcomes you in joining us for the third episode of the interview. This month, we will be visiting with OA members who identify as 100-pounder and or bariatric surgery patients. Their stories will include what it was like in the disease, what brought them to OA program, and aspects of their recovery journeys. Would any of you like to start? Thanks, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark. I'm an abstinent compulsive overeater and food addict. I'm going to quickly share a couple of photos just to sort of do that part. So when I came into the program, it was April 18, 2007, and I was 519 pounds. This is an image of me sort of a year before. And then this photo here, the one in the orange, the reason I show it, this was maybe a week after coming in program. All right. So essentially, you know, to answer the question, what was the bottom or the last straw? In 2006, around the time of that photo, I was in a hospital room. You know, I basically 525 was my highest weight I ever weighed myself. And then I went down to 375 using a pay and weigh. It's the only way I've usually, that's the majority of the way that I did things before I came in the program. And at this time in 2006, I was 489 pounds and I was in a hospital room and I had three doctors telling me that if I didn't stop doing what I was doing, I was going to die. And here's the thing, that wasn't really the straw, by the way. That was the start of it, of the last straw. Because basically, you know, I remember in that moment telling myself that I needed to be scared of what they were telling me around the death. But that wasn't, and I was frightened, totally frightened, but it wasn't about that necessarily. It was really more about, like, if I look at my God-sized hole that I have, that I brought, that is basically the part that fuels my addiction, is essentially it was being found out. And that in that moment, they saw this person that was a failure in life. Now, these were lies that I was telling myself about myself and the world around me. These were not truths. This was where my faith was in that moment. But basically, I was basically saying to myself that it's a deer in a headlight thing, and they saw this failure, this person that couldn't even take care of himself. He was morbidly obese. And then the second thing that was probably even more powerful was the fact that what they were asking me to do, to give up my friend. And by the way, friend, this is the reason why step two deals with mental illness. Because it was not my friend, right? And so what happened is they gave me a food plan again. And I took that food plan and I remember telling myself, I am going to do it this time. And I had done this throughout my whole life, lost weight, gained the weight, you know, lost the weight again, went above the weight I was before. That was my pattern, the insanity of it. But a month after that, and this is where the last straw happened, a month after that, I was in a hotel room on business in Atlanta, Georgia, eating enough food for a family of 8 to 12 people. And in that moment, I remember finally, for the first time in my life, saying that I cannot do this by myself. I need to get help. And I say to myself, and I'll end on this, I say to myself all the time, that I remember thinking at the time, is that that's the first time God talked to me. That was a lie. That's the first time I listened. And that gift of desperation I got in that moment was the thing that brought me, it was a year later, but brought me into this program. It brought me to my knees. It made me take a different action. And then I came into this program. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Mark. Would any of the other speakers like to give a quick thing of what brought you into the program finally? Michelle.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm a compulsive eater, and it's great to be here. And I'm going to try to share my pictures also. I'm clicking share content, and then I'm going to go to my texts, I guess, screen broadcast. I don't know if this is going to work. Start broadcast. 1 second. I am sharing my screen, but I don't. Can you guys see this picture?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And then here's one that's very blurry. I had to, like, go and search for before pictures. And then here's, like, a little collage I made of, like, the before and after. And now how do I stop sharing this? Oh, my gosh. Maybe stop share. Okay. Hi. So what I want to say, in the way that each of us is unique and we're all the same, I really did not feel as desperate as I think I should have. Like, when I look at those pictures, I don't know how I turned into that person, but I was that person for a long time. And it makes me very, very sad. But I had no idea what OA was. I had no idea what the solution was, and I had no idea what the problem was. So, you know, in this program, it's okay to not all have the same experience, and I would love to say I had a moment, for me, it's like, you know, the big book says we can't differentiate the true from the false. So, like, I was living in that body. I was fat my whole life. I was 284 pounds when I wasn't pregnant. And when I was pregnant, I was over 300, and my doctor's scale didn't weigh me. I'm guessing I was at like 350 or 360. I had twins. Thank God. Anyway, so it really was more that I had tried so many things, and miraculously, I was willing to keep trying things. And really, like, until OA worked, until I came into this program, I just was willing to try anything and everything. And I did try a lot of things. And like I've heard a lot of you say, like, I loved reading diet books. I loved reading nutrition books. I was always looking for some magic, easier, softer way. I wouldn't say I was a great weight loser. I lost, like, 60, 70 pounds a couple of times. But I really couldn't keep it off very long. Really, most of my life I was fat. So the point I want to make is, like, I didn't know what I had. I didn't know what my condition was, and I didn't know what OA was. But something brought me here. A friend who was here who said, like, maybe you want to try OA. She said, maybe, because I was like, I don't have binge eating disorder, because, like, when you read the criteria, I didn't have binge eating disorder. Who cares what the thing is called? It's called, like, compulsive overeating here. And I had, and the whole syndrome with blaming everyone for my problems and thinking it's everyone else and not wanting to stop eat. I didn't know that was called, I can't stop eating. I didn't know that's what it was called. I just thought I didn't want to stop eating, thinking I loved food. I loved something that was hurting me, that I was hurting myself with. So a lot of confusion, a lot of not knowing the true from the false. And like, I guess in retrospect, it's a miracle I ever walked in here, because to me, this is the only solution that ever worked, Pat.
Thank you so much, Michelle. And some of the things that you touched on are really actually going to lead us right into our next question. So I'm going to go there. And that is, what methods did you use to control your eating prior to entering the program? How did they eventually fail you, including any bariatric surgical intervention? And I see Diane has her hand up. Diane, would you share a short start on this question?
Sure. And I'm going to time myself for 5 minutes at most. So if, Cammie, you can also tell me if I have 30 seconds left, if I'm not cognizant of the time. I believe out of the five of us, I'm the only one who's had the bariatric surgery. So I'm going to take you through a lickety-split tour of my crazy seven bariatric procedures. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. When Lap-Band became approved by the FDA here, I was not heavy enough to get the Lap-Band procedure. But I was crazy enough, I would try anything. I found a reputable surgeon in Mexico. I went to Mexico in September 2007. I had the Lap-Band procedure. And for once, for 8 months, in a long history of my life, I had the honeymoon. I knew what it was like to be a regular eater. I could eat a bite of whatever it was and go, oh, I've had enough. Pinch me. I'm in heaven. But guess what? Like my twin brother says, you can paint a leopard white, but the spots always come through. I am a compulsive overeater. I have a disease of the mind and an allergy of the body. So guess what? I screwed up my Lap-Band. I had to have two revisions, two. So that's the three surgeries, okay? And after each successive one, it worked less and less. Hey, what the hell do I do? Guess what? At one point, I went into two meetings in OA. When I heard about fessing up my wrongs and making amends, I said, no way, no way. You might as well shoot me naked in front of a firing squad in a blizzard. There's no way in hell I'm going to do that. So out I went. Called a doctor in Mexico because I wasn't fat enough, didn't have a high enough BMI to get other surgery here in the United States. Called and said, you've got to help me. I'm crazy. I'm absolutely out of my mind. All I can think about is food. He said, come on down. He did some tests and he said, you're done with the Lap-Band. You have Barrett's esophagus, megaesophagus. Your stomach's destroyed. We're going to take out the Lap-Band and let's do the sleeve. Sure, whatever you say, anything, anything to get me to stop thinking about food because I can barely function. He took out the Lap-Band, gave me the sleeve. Within 2 weeks coming home, I wanted to eat more than ever. I was insane. I couldn't even find medical research that said that anybody had this kind of effect after having sleeve surgery. I called him and begged him to do something else. You know, the other part of the construction for the the bariatric surgery for, you know, flipping the intestines around. And he said, you've got to wait 3 months. I said, I can't wait 3 months. I'm ready to die. I'm ready to throw myself out a window because I cannot function. There's a terrorist in my head that's taking me over, and I'm tired of fighting. He finally let me come down after 2 months. He did the other half of the gastric bypass, which those of you who may know about gastric bypass, sleeve, and then a rewiring of the intestines. I'm sorry if I'm talking fast for interpreters, but I have very little time to get through this and share with you what I think is very important about my crazy journey with bariatric surgeries. He let me come down at the two-month mark. He went in. He did the other half of the surgery. He's a highly reputed surgeon, chief of bariatric surgery in NYU, knew him and gave him a, you know, a 10 thumbs up. Had that done. And then, like usual in Mexico, as per protocol, getting out of the hospital afterwards was a protocol of being in a good hotel, drinking tons of water, walking, and then after several days, getting on a plane and going home. I drank fluid that had particles in it. It was a broth, and the particles opened up the anastomosis, part of the surgical connection. And I didn't know it, but what happened was it created an infection. All I knew, I was thirsty as hell. Drank 7 liters of water, felt like I hadn't drank a sip. I've got 15 seconds to tell you that what unfolded was a nightmare. I had 2 liters of pus in no time at all swimming through my intestines. As God somehow had it, got me back to the States. I had two more surgeries, life-saving surgeries. Thank you, Academy. I was on life support in the hospital and in a nursing home for 2 months, came home. 2 weeks later, I wanted to eat everything. I fell on my knees and screamed, God help me. And then I came to the rooms of OA and I said, naked in front of a firing squad is nothing. I've been to hell. I can do OA. And I'm here and it has saved my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Gail, I see your hand up. Would you care to come in and share with us on your journey?
Yes. Hi, my name is Gail, grateful, recovering, compulsive reader, living every day joyfully in recovery. My OA journey goes back to 1986, when I was young and naive and found OA in a real life meeting in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and there were 20 of us in the room. And I saw the 15 questions on a wall in a doctor's office. And I went into my doctor's appointment and I said, crying, and I said, I need this. I need this. There's nothing. I'm at my end of my rope. I don't know what I can do. And I lost 100 pounds. I came in obese. I left anorexic. And for me, it was anorexic, and for me, it was obese. So my highest weight was about 230 pounds. And coming back to OA, finding OA on Zoom after a 30-year relapse, our meeting went down to two people and we had to close it, and I tried to stay up and on my own, but very important tool is meetings, and there was no computers back in the early 90s. And during when COVID first struck, I made that call to somebody who I knew was in OA all these years, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I said, I'd do anything for OA to be on Zoom right now. I've been on OA. I've been on Zoom for my own business for 5 years now, but they said there is. All the meetings are on Zoom. So I say COVID was a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing because I saw my OA family all over the world. And friends are family. They're my family. We have the same 12 steps, 12 traditions, 9 tools, the same big book, and we can connect anywhere we are in the world with each other. And it was a curse when I got COVID, my family got COVID, and the world shut down. But for me, I released over 70 pounds during COVID. But it wasn't just a physical release. It was the emotional release, finding my higher power, and finding my spirituality deeper than I could ever imagine. And it's the three-legged stool that keeps me going. And what brought me to OA, and I shared this with Diane originally, that I'm not a 100-pounder. Since COVID, I've released another 20 pounds. I've released over 90 pounds now. But I can't become complacent in this program. I've lost it once, And I found that when you lose your keys, you want to find them. Now I've released it by working the steps, carrying the message to those who still suffer, doing my step 12 on a daily basis, bookending my day with meetings. This is my fourth meeting today. I've never spoken when I've been scheduled to speak. I've spoken just because I've been in a meeting. So I didn't know what to expect with this. And it has saved my life. My prediction was I should have been in a wheelchair. I shouldn't be walking 108 stairs to the Tower of Hope at the Human Rights Museum. I came into away November 1st, 2020, not being able to walk stairs, not being able to get down on the floor, not being able to have my freedom. I couldn't drive a car distances. Now I can drive anywhere I want. It's given me the non-scale victories that have changed my life forever. And it's those non-scale victories that I hold on to dearly. And if I ever think of taking that first compulsive bite, I remember the dark times and the dark space when I didn't ever want to wake up before 11 a.m. And then I didn't want to wake up at all. And the dark thoughts, I don't like calling them suicidal thoughts, but the misery I was living in. I was a primary caregiver for my parents, and I was the one who was going to be in the wheelchair. And I have pictures when I had broken my ankle where my father and I are both in wheelchairs at the same time. And my parents are both since gone. And my mother, in her deep dementia, saw me and thought I was a child again. She didn't even know I was her grown daughter anymore. And people tell me now I look like I did when I was 18, and I'm 65. So I say 65 is the new 40, and we can do anything we want to do when we put our mind to it. And I have some pictures. I don't know if they're going to share properly. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes, we can. We can see pictures.
So that's me at a black tie affair at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Crying.
So that's my before and after photos.
Thank you so much.
And that after photo is from 2 years ago where I currently am right now.
Thank you, Gail. I'd like to give Ed, our other speaker, a chance to speak on either of those questions, if you'd like, Ed.
Yes. Okay. Did you say you had another question, or do you want me to speak now?
If you want to go with that, or I can give you another question. I'd rather hear your story.
Okay.
A little of your story.
I have some pictures.
Okay.
Okay. In 1978, I weighed 210 pounds. I was smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day and, living a horrible life. I went into, therapy and I got hypnotized, and this is me a year later. I became anorexic. I was crazy. And of course, because I didn't have program, I started to put the weight back on. In, 1999, first I'll show you my picture of today. This is how I am today. The shirt says, Grateful Dad, not Grateful Dead. My son gave that to me, and I owe that relationship to my journey and program. What brought me into the rooms in 1999 was a good friend of mine. She weighed over 300 pounds and went into the hospital to have her legs cut off from diabetes. And she caught an infection and died. And for the past few years before she died, I was advising her what to do about her eating while I was eating in secret. I saw the scale up at 195. I was afraid to go over 200. And after she died, we were with her family, and I was eating myself. I was walking back and forth from the living room to the kitchen where all the sweets were for the mourners, and I couldn't stop eating. And I turned to my wife. 9 years before that, someone had showed me the 15 questions. I saw the word God in the third step. Didn't want to have anything to do with OA. And finally, you know, I was ready. I was ready. I walked into the rooms. It took me 4 months to get a sponsor. I told my sponsor that first sponsor that I knew what to eat, and he said, "Okay, let's work the steps." And December of 1999, I took my third step. He put me in. In January of 2000, he put me in touch with a nutritionist. It happened to be the nutritionist that wrote the plans that are now in Where Do I Start? God is working in my life. In 2015, I developed stomach cancer. It was found by a miracle. I choked on a piece of steak. They had to do an emergency endoscopy. They went into my stomach, and it was full of tumors. Mm-hmm. No symptoms. Stomach cancer is a killer because, again, it will spread before you have any symptoms. They took out 90% of my stomach. And I thank God because I learned how to weigh and measure my food when I really had to. I had to eat small meals. I had to be on protein shakes to get enough into my body. My weight went down to 135 pounds. And all of a sudden, I was looking at the fact that I had to put on weight, which was scary for me because I had worked so hard with my higher power to take off the weight. I took off 60 pounds. And little by little, over 5 years, I was able to work with my nutritionist and able to build myself up. Today, I am cancer-free by the grace of God. And as of June of 2023, I'm on what would you call normal foods. I still can't eat a lot at one time, but I don't have to be on a liquid diet. Thank you. I'm grateful to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ed, for your comments. Speakers, I'm going to ask that we go to about 2 minute shares on responses so we can get to a whole lot of questions, if you don't mind. And the first one that I want to throw out, and I'll throw it out to anyone, please raise your virtual hand. You know, it takes a lot of courage for us to come in here, especially those of us who are morbidly obese. And I'm from that number, too. I came from 560. It was my high number. How were you treated, especially as a newcomer in the rooms? What fears did you have? What kept you coming back? Were you welcomed in ways that you didn't expect, or did you hear a particular message of hope? What was that message? What inspired you? So if you, a couple of you would mind sharing on that really quickly, please. Michelle.
Thanks. Really quickly, what kept me coming back in the beginning was curiosity, because everything I was hearing was totally new and very interesting to me, like in my head, and it wasn't in my heart yet. I felt welcomed. I didn't feel extremely welcomed. Like, I'm not one of the people who came in and said, like, oh, I found my home. I didn't know that. I just felt like I walked into another planet where I didn't speak the language at all, and I was really curious. And when I was sitting there, when the first person got their 30, when I saw the first 30-day coin being given, and I was just beginning to understand what abstinence was, and I thought, oh, my gosh, how can anyone do this for 30 days? And now 11 and a half years later, I'm hoping that people see that it's possible. And I guess maybe on an unconscious level, I began to see the evidence of what happens in this program and how it can work for people. And I was seeking out 100-pounders everywhere so I could see, so I could hear their stories and hear what they did. And I guess that gave me hope that maybe I could someday be a 100-pounder, which I, thank God, am now. It was like a very slow, gradual process of understanding that I was clinging to things that I had to let go of, and I had to begin to cling to other things that were worth clinging to. But really, it was curiosity, and curiosity keeps me here every day. I'm so interested in hearing how people do it and what works for people and what the disease was like. Pass.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Great answer. This must be a popular question. Mark, why don't you go too?
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark. I'm an absent compulsive overeater and food addict. For me, I remember my first meeting I ever went to. And by the way, fears, what were my fears? Coming into the meeting, coming into this program, my fears were essentially that they weren't going to get me. Right. And also the fear around what you were asking me to do, because I had no concept of it. But again, this is the program I didn't believe at first, but I did it anyway. And it ended up being the most important thing I ever did for myself. So coming into that first meeting, it was in a hospital in Florida, and there were 60 people in the rooms. And they said, are there any newcomers? And the one thing that I can say that I remember, the first experience I had around this, was 60 people said, hi, Mark. And that was a healing thing for someone that isolated himself, even if he was surrounded by people. The second thing, and this wasn't one item, but it was more the experience of all of you. First of all, you love me until I could learn to love myself. And the way you showed that, I basically heard loving action, right? I heard, saw, I witnessed through the actions of other people doing for me, basically a lot of people that were God-oriented instead of self-oriented. And there's a saying in the AA 12 and 12 that really, it's really around the service that we do. And it says, almost from the beginning, we have been positive that face-to-face work with the alcoholic who suffers could be based only on the desire to help and be helped. And what led me, what my first response was, all of that help that I was getting, all of that loving support, was I got to pay it forward. I remember that strong, and then I set about that path of giving back what was given to me.
Thanks. Gail.
When I came back into the rooms on Zoom, on November 1st, 2020, my original sponsor from the 1980s was in that room. And last I remembered, she was pregnant with her third child or something, and she had, like, I don't know, six kids and grandkids and everything. And I went, wow, this person has been there all these years, and I would not show my face. I would not speak at all. And then after the meeting was over, they said, the newcomer is the most important person in the room. Please stay after so we can answer any questions you have. And then it was my married name, not my maiden name. And then someone said, I think I recognize your voice. And he said, let us love you before you can love yourself again. We know you'll get back there again. And they figured out who I was. And then we all cried together. And I've never left the room since.
Thanks, Gail. And?
When my first meeting was a women's meeting. I had called the OA office. They referred me to this meeting, and it was all women. The person that was speaking that night did not want to share with a man in the room. They asked me to wait outside. And an angel, a woman, came out, and we had a nice 20-minute newcomers meeting. Well, the and then I went back into the meeting because my wife had come with me. And she had given me the contact person for a men's meeting that happened to be right down the street from me, that I didn't want to go to the night that I called because I was still not ready to get in. And when I went to that meeting, there were about 10 guys sitting around the table, and they were going around the table sharing. Nobody told me that I had to, I could pass. And I shared my pain. And walking out of the meeting, a guy came over and he said, "Can I give you a hug?" And a man had never said that to me before. "Can I give you a hug?" And that was enough to get me to come back. And I've been coming back now for 25 years. My abstinent date is August 14th, 1999. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Okay, and I'm going to move on to another question. I'd like to ask each of you, what were some of the biggest challenges you had when you first started coming into the rooms? What were some of the biggest challenges you faced when you first came in? And if nobody wants to respond to that, I have more questions. Hi, Mark. Come on in.
I didn't think I was up first there. There was a lot of hands going up. I'm going to tell you something about sort of when I first came in, like before I even came in the program, I was talking to someone and they were telling me about the 12 steps and it being critical to my recovery, right? So this is the way. And by the way, I went into my first meeting probably not knowing I was coming in my first meeting maybe 2 hours before I was going. And that was critical for me because I didn't have a chance to run the other way. So the thing for me that was important, that was big, is when this person was talking to me. And this shows you sort of a little snapshot of what my struggles were coming in. The first thing this person said is they walked through the steps and they started talking about step 8 and 9, making amends to those persons I had harmed. And I started crying at that point. I'm trying to hold it in because that's what I was taught. Trying to hold it in, and then I left that meeting with that person, and I got in a car and went to a hotel room, and I cried the whole way there. And I went into this. Well, anyway, I won't go into the story, but essentially, then I started doing steps 8 and 9 before I'm even in the program. Number one, that gives a snapshot of sort of my struggle, you know, kind of a thing. But you know. For me, it was, you know, 4-step was easier for me. Problem was I was a little distorted at that point because to me, I could look at my defects. I couldn't look at my assets. So this was one of those really critical things. But the last thing I'll say is step 2 was very difficult for me. And mostly because it was part of the process of me to throw lifelong conceptions out the window. You know, and you guys told me, act as if. I didn't hear you, and then finally I did. And then all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, there was a part where I remember hearing a voice that was never there before that said, you're going to be okay. So, thanks.
Thank you. Diane, would you come in and share with us, please?
Yeah, very quickly, I just want to share that for me, the biggest challenge, two of the biggest challenges when I came into the room, first was I was scared to death that somebody I knew from the outside world, especially being a respected fitness professional, would recognize me and my reputation would be in the gutter. I have no fear of that today. The second thing was that I initially felt as though I was not taken seriously. I mean, even though I'd just been out of a hospital a month and had all this crazy stuff going on and I'm trying to heal and I could barely walk, I still looked incredibly healthy. And I felt like I wasn't somehow seen until people heard my story. Thank you.
Thank you. Gail.
the hardest part for me was, well, first coming back, first finding a way in 1986 was being scared because I, in a small community, that I would know people in that room. And sure enough, I walked in and I knew like four people in that room. But then I had to say to myself, well, if they're there and I'm here, well, we're all in this together. And coming back into a way in 2020 on Zoom and really seriously digging in and knowing I've done the step four before, I've given away the step five, but finding myself putting the same resentment and the same issues. I was in a physically abusive relationship back in the late 80s, and putting some of the same people on there, and then adding more that's happened over the past 30 years, like my husband's ex-wife and other people who've come into the picture since. But finally, I had to really dig deep and have the willingness to admit my powerlessness, that I don't have willpower. As my father, may he rest in peace, told me from a young child, have willpower, push away from the table. As my mother would say, food is love, let her eat, it's okay. Whatever she's going to eat is better than not eating at all. Even if it was, my mother called it drunken chazarai. If you want to eat that, and then that's what's going to get you through the day. Sorry, I'm just using slang here now in another language. But at home, I had a junk drawer locked from me, so my siblings had access and I didn't. And that's a whole other story. So coming into these rooms, it was accepting me for who I was. Everyone else accepted me, but I didn't accept myself.
Thank you, Bill. Ed.
Yes, my biggest problem was fear. Right? And a fear ruled my life. I found out through working the steps that I was an abused child. I never admitted it before. I had taken the number of a number of guys that to be a sponsor. I even asked them if I can call them. But fear stopped me from picking up that phone and calling them. And it wasn't until August 14th of 1999, at that meeting, and I was telling my food stories, that next day, some guy from that meeting called me, and we had a nice talk, and he was became my first sponsor, because someone reached out to me, not because I reached out to someone, I thank that person every day in my prayers. And when I saw the steps, I figured, well, gee, maybe I could do step one. I knew that. Two, maybe three, no, because I was still an agnostic then. And maybe seven. Yeah, I want to get rid of things that are wrong with me. And today, I work steps 10, 11, and 12 every single day, because I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Michelle.
Hey, would you mind just repeating the question, because I want to make sure that I got it?
Sure. What were some of the biggest challenges you had when you first started the OA program of recovery?
Yeah. One thing was, since I felt so defective, I was always afraid of being embarrassed. One thing was being honest about the food. I was terrified to be honest about what I felt when I ate certain foods, because I didn't want to give them up. I also, was terrified of giving up feeling sorry for myself, for what I had been through. As a fat person and a young person who lost my husband, and I walked into the rooms and people were all sharing things they had been through. And I was like, what? I'm not special with what I've been through, but that turns out to be a huge gift. I found coming in very, very scary and difficult in the beginning, but I just kept coming back. Thanks.
Thank you. Before I move on to the next question, I'm going to ask the speakers to remember. First of all, we've had a lot of people that have come in since y'all have had your individual shares at the beginning. And the meeting is a meeting on 100 Pounders of Bariatrics. So if you can remember to kind of address that for the people who are coming in, who probably have come in to hear that, if you can focus that in thinking about your questions, I'd appreciate it. Maybe we can do, like, for these next couple of questions, since we have maybe 15 minutes left for questions here before others start sharing, maybe we can leave it to a minute or two again, but maybe one or two people on each of the questions. Thinking about that 100-pound idea, how did having a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience transform your life and your issues with food? Go ahead, Michelle.
I'm happy to answer any question. I wish you would tell us who should talk, because we all are here to talk, you know. But it turns out one of the biggest transformative pieces is accepting that I'm not running the show that I thought I had to run. I thought I had to control everything. I thought it's not that I wanted to control everything. It's that I thought it was my job to do this myself. I thought it was everyone's job to take care of themselves. And so it turns out my spiritual awakening is like acceptance of reality, recognize that reality is part of what my higher power is, because all the things I don't want to accept, I think they're all, I used to think they were all up to me. And believe me, as you know, life has plenty of things that are hard to accept and hard, and I was walking through life thinking it was all up to me. And nothing was up to me. And so that is an endlessly frustrating process. And as soon as I can acknowledge, like, I don't know what God is, but God isn't me. It's something greater than I am. I don't make myself breathe. I don't make my eyes blink. And whatever that is, whatever that collection of forces is that is actually running things, it isn't me. And so there's something transformational about accepting that I am not in charge and I need to learn to deal with whatever is actually happening. I think I'm going to stop there.
Good. Thanks. Mark, would you come in and share us on this question, please?
Hi, I'm Mark. I'm an absent compulsive overeater and food addict. So for me, person coming in at, you know, 519 pounds. And by the way, April 18, 2007, that is my abstinence date. So the thing, there's a concept that's kind of come into my mind as I grow in this recovery, and essentially it's humility. And the way I'm going to kind of align that to sort of how God helps me with the issues of food is that in reality, my food is God-sized. So humility, and we've heard the right-sized concept, that humility is right-sized, that is what my food is about. That is the place that I put my food, that it is right-sized. It is not, you know, gluttony or deprivation, but it's even more than that. The choices that I make, the where I am in the world and who I'm with in the world, I mean, my dialogue with my sponsees as well as my fiance and all of those things and everything in my life, it's about being right-sized. And that right-sized is aligned to all of our spiritual principles, hope, courage, honesty, hope, courage, faith, and that has changed my life and the actions that I take that are aligned with God. So, thanks.
Thanks. Gail, I'm going to give you a little twist on the question, if you don't mind. And would you tell us what your, instead of the spiritual awakening, would you tell us what your relationship's like with your higher power? And how do you improve your practice daily conscious contact with higher power?
I think that is my higher power speaking to me right now, because I want to talk about my higher power. So what happened to me when I really had my conscious contact with God and finding my higher power, that to say, on my mother's deathbed, I was at an OA meeting December 27th. 2023, just, and I have found a renewed feeling of a higher power. I went to the meeting with 200 people at 6:30 in the morning, and my mother took her last breath. And if it wasn't for me being in OA and having my freedom back to drive to be with her at a hospital that was 45 minutes away for the last 72 hours, if it wasn't for OA, I wouldn't have been there. And that was a higher power moment. And spiritual math for me is 1 + 1 = 3. So if there's two people in a room, my higher power is always present with me. So it is always 3. And my religious God and my spiritual God, I still have the trouble aligning the two. Because I say daily prayers for my mother in her memory with my religious God, but my spiritual God feeds me through my OA program, through my 12-step program, and believing that my non-scale victories will keep me in OA for the rest of my life. And it's my higher power that carries me through the day, and that I know I'm never alone.
Thanks, Gail. Ed.
Yes, I just wanted to say that that guy who, when he saw step 3, 9 years before I came in, saw the word God and ran away from it, that guy now gets on his knees every morning and meditate to see if I can listen to see what God has in store for me. My higher power, who I call God, and keeping my mind open. About a year ago or 2 years ago, I heard someone talk about two-way prayer, and you write a question and wait till God talks to you, and I go, what? God talking to you? Listen to your voices? What's up? That's crazy. Well, the more I listened, the more I tried it about 6 months ago. And I've been feeling so much closer to my higher power, when I've been doing it. For me, it's keeping my mind open, and I can learn something new every day. So thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Okay, my next question, I'm going to give you two questions, and I want you to choose either one that you would like to speak to, and try to do this as a real quick one, like 1 minute, if you can, because we can come back to another question later that I think is important too. The first one is, what is the most important life-changing lesson or experience you've had in recovery? Or what is your favorite tool or daily action that you do? Mark.
Okay. Hi, Mark, absolute compulsive overeating food addict. So life-changing lessons, experiences that of recovery so far. So I'm going to talk about one. Well, I'll talk about two real quick. So one is, let me set the timer here. One is the concept of feelings aren't evidence of truth. They're evidence of what I'm putting my faith in. And asking myself in every moment, where is my faith in this moment? Is it in my higher power? Is it in the lies that I'm telling myself about myself and the world around me? However, probably one of the other big pieces that my sponsor gave me was to give me a question and not answer it. And I was talking to him about the promises. And he said, yes, Bart, that's the other promises. Or he said, that's one half of the promises is what he said. Now, he never really answered that. And so then I went upon this journey of what are those other promises. And I did this crazy thing of taking the promises in the big book and writing them backwards, right? If we are not painstaking about this phase of development, anyway, you get it. I'm going to encourage you all to try that because it's powerful, because it gives me the promises of my disease.
Thank you. Ed.
I actually have two tools that I want to talk about. First, my first sponsor taught me that service is swimming. Service will keep you abstinent, and I try to do service every day through sponsoring and just being here today. and the telephone. I called someone last week, and he said to me, "I'm so grateful that you call me, Ed. You know, I've learned to call other people because you reach out and call me." And that was a gift. That was a gift. Thank you.
Thank you. Gail.
Service and meetings are very key, and also public information. I'm my public information intergroup chair, and that just happened because I said we need to get this message out, because even our Zoom meetings, when COVID opened up, were dwindling, and we were getting sometimes five people. I know you only need two people to have a meeting, but there's always three present. So I end up being my public information chair for Intergroup and carrying the message to wellness expos and trade shows, and being invited to speak to healthcare professionals and get the message out. And I know the traditional 11 is people before personalities, but we need to carry this message where I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba. People just think I'm just part of a cult, because why are you studying a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when you don't drink and you don't smoke and you don't do drugs? And like, what are you in? Why are you still in this? Like, you.
Gotcha. Thanks. Oh, Michelle.
Really quickly, I think of like all the tools plus prayer and meditation as like a Rolodex. And it's like, whenever I'm feeling willing, I'm like, which thing am I feeling most interested in doing? What thing am I? And I find like, as long as I'm doing something for my program, it's helpful to my program. But I do love to pray, and I love to, continue to like, build my foundation with my higher power as the one to turn to instead of the food or people.
Thanks. And that's going to lead us to the idea of tools is going to lead us into the next idea. And again, try to keep it to 1 minute. But what are some of the current challenges that you're dealing with right now? And what tools do you work with them? Or how do you live in the solution? Maybe focus on living in the solution. Diane, we haven't heard from you in a bit. Would you like to come in and share with us?
I'm going to wait until that last question. Go ahead.
Thank
you. Okay, Mark. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm at some compulsive overeating and food addict. Start my timer there. So one of the challenges that I face, and it's really around, me, giving to God this sort of concept that I have around living with the crumbs that I gave myself, about being found out. And it's around work, and I'm not going to go into the details. I'm going to go into the solution. Essentially, I have a thing that my sponsor gave me that was essentially taking a problem through all 12 steps. It's essentially a long form 10 step thing. And I just got finished doing a retreat on the very same thing. But one of the concepts I'll bring in, I'm not going to go into details because there's just not enough time, is one of the questions asked, what are three old ideas and three new ideas to replace them with? And what are three old actions and three new actions to replace them with? That part of it, and that's not the only thing, but that part of it always leaves me with, I know what that next right God-oriented action is for myself. And that's important for me, someone that avoidance is his biggest character defect. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm going to go to our last question. And since Diane knows what it is, I'm going to ask her to speak first. But if you could go back in time and speak to your child or the person growing up that you were, what would you tell that person? If you could go back to that person before they got to be needing the place of 100 pounds, what would you tell that person? Diane.
Okay, I was never a 100-pounder, but I was sick and suffering even as a young kid with eating disorders and couldn't understand what the heck was wrong with me and why I couldn't control it. And if I could go back in time, if I could be this fairy godmother who could go back in time, I would take that little girl and wrap my arms around her and say, honey, it's not your fault and it's not yours to fix on your own. You can get help, and there are people and a solution that can bring you to a higher power that can help you with this. The second to the last question on there was anecdotes on relationships closest to us that may have changed as a result of recovery. Very quickly, I want to say my eldest brother, I hated him because of sexual abuse he incurred on me when I was a young girl. And by the grace of God in this program, I was able to work to forgive him. And he and I now have one of the best friendships out of anybody in my life. Thank you.
Thanks. Ed.
I would probably have said, told that little kid that God loves you. You are enough. You're good enough, and you're worthy of God's love. That's a saying that I came up with. Because being a kid, being a fat kid, I was bullied, before, people didn't know anything about bullying then. and I would just say that I'm so grateful that I was able to reconstruct a relationship with my son, and my grandchildren do not know the screaming, angry person I was before I came in the program. Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
Hi, my name is Gail, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. The inner child in me who was bullied and ostracized and told I was a spaz, and I was hit by a bus when I was in grade 5, so I have suffered seizures through my lifetime. And teachers thought I was just daydreaming, and I was teased. I would tell that child, it's okay not to be okay. It's not your fault. Just like it's not our fault that we're compulsive overeaters. It's a disease. It's a real disease. And when the medical community recognizes it, that compulsive overeating is just as serious as alcoholism, that will be a day to be reckoned. And it's important to tell ourselves
that
I love you, I love me, and embrace yourself and give yourself a hug, because we're all here with each other.
Thank you. I want to take a second to thank each of you very much. We want to open it up for sharing at this point. Y'all have done a great job. I hope I didn't rush any of you by giving you those 2 minutes or 1 minute with quick talks. But I wanted to get through as many questions and ideas as possible. So thank you so much. We're going to shut the recording off at this point because we need to do that in order to have open shares.
The opinions expressed here today are strictly those of the individual OA member and do not represent OA as a whole.